Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Well, big speak.
All right, Doc. I was trying to call at 10, but I guess they said 10:30 is the start time.
Yeah, okay, Lloyd Carroll is joining. We'll just hang on with us a minute there, Lloyd. We got the legendary Lloyd Carroll. Big C.
All right, Doc. Yep. Appreciate being on the show with you.
Yeah, okay, Lloyd. Well, hey, we should have you. Hold on a second, Lloyd. Let me check with my other calls. Big C, we got the control set up?
Well, yes, we do.
Okay, that's Lloyd Carroll joining us this week. One of the guests that we put up on. Lloyd is one of the...
You know, I would say Lloyd would be like a lot of like the John the Baptist in the wilderness of sports writing, you know, telling the truth. You know, it's amazing. I've long said that it's the grassroots papers who really make the difference, because the real people read those papers. That's the difference in yourself. I remember Barney Kamingo, who was the PR guy for the first PR guy for the New York Nets, and he was the PR guy for the New York Giants, and Willie Mays was here. And I remember he said, you know, when you go to an affair, you look at upstairs, you know, at the cheap seats. Those are your sellouts, because the seats downstairs are usually taken care of, even more so today by corporations. But he said, you know, it's the cheap seats, and it's those kind of people that you reach who decide that, you know what, I'm going to spend $50, or I'm going to pay $60 for pay-per-view. When they read a Lloyd Carroll, when they read a Howie Evans, a Jamie Evans, Marion Borkman, legendary Marion Borkman, those kind of guys, and we've been so long trying to get it. I mean, you know, it's amazing how when you go to these media people and they have a hard time giving the so-called weeklies a credential, you know, but yet Lloyd is a guy who's sort of been boycotted because he's read so redundantly in the truth that a lot of the PR people know who he is. It's amazing that they act like they know who you are, but they know who this guy is, and this guy has a profound effect on the scope of the whole sports scene. So now, you know, he has problems in certain locations because of who he is, but that means they know who he is as opposed to these guys who come from the daily papers who just basically are just, I mean, carbon copies of each other. But you know what we got to do? First of all, we got to get in and open up with Coltrane. You know, I talked to Larry Hardesty was at the Knick game today, but we're going to open up with our opening prayer. We should have Destino should be joining us, Mel Smith Jr., Lonnie Bradley should be joining us also. Well, we got Lloyd, so we're going to have him and Dusty should have a good time. Good day for you and the mother there of Big C.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was a good Easter to everybody, and thank you for having me, Doc. And I appreciate the kind words. You've always been a champion of the weekly papers. It's funny. I wish, I know you come from a weekly paper background, but it's amazing how many people always feel like second-class citizens, but never you, Doc. You've always stood up for us, and I've always appreciated that.
Thanks, Lloyd. Lloyd, hang on just a minute, buddy. Big C, let's open up with Coltrane, and then we'll let Larry Hardesty start at the beginning of the show.
Sounds good.
As always, opening with a prayer. Dear Lord, John Coltrane, opening Sunday. Lord, we thank you for another day. We thank you for another Sunday. We thank you for the little things that we so largely take for granted. We thank you for blessings unseen, all undeserved, unmerited. But more importantly, give us not much what we want, but what we need. Let us remember the significance of this day, what it means to mankind, and the sacrifice that was made. It's more important that your will be first and foremost in our lives. Bless our families, bless our friends, all my family here in Brazil. And more importantly, your will, your way. A simple, dear Lord. A heartfelt. Never been able to be said enough. Thank you. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen. And now, the greatest amateur sportscast in the history of New York City Radio, Larry Hardesty, could you start the show for us, Larry, please, if you have no problem? Mr. Hardesty?
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
said Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network. Mail to the Sports Network Show. I saw that Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Solar Channel Sports Network Show. You know, Lord, it's amazing that you would say that because, you know, you're a guy who's always stood up. You're a guy who's always said not what he had to say, but what had to be said. You know, it's amazing that you, and the thing about it, there's so much substance. And you're talking Ivy League.
Well, that's very kind of you, Doc. I mean, one thing I always try to get across, and it's amazing. Most sports writers are like children. They don't want to know the business side of anything. They want to just talk about statistics, and there's a place for that. But they don't want to see the big picture. They're a bunch of Mr. Magoos. And, you know, again, people like yourself in the press box are a breath of fresh air. But this is the problem that I face. I mean, I've been covering a lot of baseball. You see what's going on with the Mets and Bernie Madoff. Most sports writers still haven't got a clue of how much trouble, financial trouble the Mets are in because they don't know anything about accounting.
Wow. Lloyd, bring some light to that subject. I mean, you're the Queens guy. It's a situation that is a lot more serious than what is known.
The situation with the Mets is very serious. They, as far as Wilpon's management goes, this is a team that's heavily in debt, heavily leveraged. Cash flow is a major issue, and I mean, it's a private corporation, so there's going to be a certain amount of speculation, but all signs point a very bleak picture.
Now, is this a situation, Lloyd, that we cannot all blame off the Madoff situation? I mean, has there been some mismanagement, some things not...
Oh, there's no question. Let's in some ways, the Mets' financial problems stem from a number of issues,
wow.
Even pre-Madoff. Bad contracts, Fred Wilpon overestimating how much he could afford to buy out his old partner, Nelson Doubleday's interest. There was leverage. Even though he didn't lose money with Bernie Madoff per se, according to Irving Bacard, the federal trustee, the Mets actually made $50 million. However, there's a big problem with that because the Mets thought they had $700 million. They thought Bernie Madoff, their investments with him were worth $700 million, not $350. That's why that stadium that I was in today, Citi Field, was leveraged for $700 million, except the problem is Mets only had $350 million in assets to pay that back. So they are in a deep hole.
Lloyd, was a lot of this Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul Center Sports Network show, Lloyd Carroll, one of the legendary sports writers in the city, a real throwback, a real guy. How much of this... you know, when you talk Doubleday, and if you can say one thing about Doubleday, he was a baseball guy. How much of this was due to the fact that they're not baseball people, Lloyd?
There's no question that, well, the Wilpons were real estate guys, and you know, you're right. I mean, in terms of actual baseball knowledge, probably limited. Doubleday had a nice feel for the game. Obviously, his name has long been associated with baseball. But you know what? He had a good feel. It was Doubleday who said, we need to get Mike Piazza signed no matter what, not Fred Wilpon. It's little things like that that determine, I think, the success of that franchise in its glory days. Really, since the Wilpons have had sole possession of it, things have not gone very well, even aside from Bernie Madoff.
No question about it. Have you joined us, Justino? Have we got...
Mel Smith Jr. here, Doctor.
Okay.
How are you?
Okay, Mel Smith, the... former Daily Star, we've got Lloyd Carroll in the house. Questions.
Lloyd, a pleasure.
Mel, my pleasure as well. Good chatting with you.
Mel,
you
got something for Lloyd?
I do, as a matter of fact.
Go
ahead.
You know,
Lloyd, with all these financial problems, you know, with the Mets organization, the players themselves, I believe this is Reyes' walk year. What happens if he has a really big year, Lloyd? Do the Mets have the money? Would they sign him long term? Or would they be worried about his health and him being able to hold up for, say, you know, 3 to 5 years?
You know, it's a funny thing. I don't think they're that worried about his health, per se, more than they would any other player. We just have to worry about health for any player. I think this is a case of corporate America. You know what happens when corporate America when new management comes in, as is the case with Sandy Alderson taking over for Omar Minaya? Certain corporate assets are looked on as the old team versus the new team. And I think that Sandy Alderson sees Jose Reyes as one of Omar's guys, part of the old Mets image. I just don't think he's a Jose Reyes guy, and I think he will trade him. Figures that's worth they can always try to sell the public on the fact that they're going to get prospects and five tool guys. You'll hear a lot of that talk in July. But I think the fact that he's not one of Sandy's finds and the fact that he is making a lot of money for a team that really is going to have to reduce payroll, I think we better enjoy Jose Reyes while we can watch him here in Citi Field.
Okay, great. Because, you know, I wanted to know, you know, on the same notion that, you know, on the one hand, figuring, the fans are figuring, Lloyd, that there's going to be a massive fire sale real soon, a massive fire sale of players real soon here. And like you said, hoping to get back young prospects and, you know, major league ready talent. But by the same token, at the same time, you know, these, you know, so-called troubles of the Mets and their cash flow problems are legendary by now.
Sure. And it's funny thing, I think the worst case situation for a guy like Alderson and Fred Wilpon would be for the Mets to come July and let's say they're in the pennant race for whatever it's worth, at least on the wild card situation, because then it becomes an embarrassment. You put up the white flag at that point. I think secretly the Mets probably upset that they've won four games in a row right now. I think they'd just rather be play out the string. I mean, on one level, you'd want to get some fans in there, but you want to be able to justify that fire sale that you just mentioned, Mel.
Okay, thanks. And like I said, it's obviously a pleasure having you on the panel. And yeah, Doc, as I was saying to Lloyd earlier, you know, that's what I was wondering. I mean, are they going to try to keep this thing interesting and hang in there as best they can, or are they going to try to, you know, get rid of guys, try to get some younger, less expensive talent, and try to rebuild from here? And number two, my question to you both is, I mean, they can't do much worse than they are now, but can you sell the idea of rebuilding to a New York audience?
I think you can. I think this is one of the great myths that New Yorkers are impatient and they need to have major league talent at any given point. I think we see this with the Knicks, that people were willing to say, okay, we'll take a step back as long as we're going in the right direction. I think with the Mets case, where every year you added on a big contract thinking that's going to solve the problem, and in fact it just made things worse, I think fans are willing to take a step back. I don't think they're willing to see a Jose Reyes necessarily go for a bag of balls in return, but I do think that they are willing to take a step back and let players develop. As long as they feel that, as long as they feel eventually they'll turn into
something. Just one more quick thing. I also wanted to know, with the lackluster way, well, not lately. Lately they've actually had, like you said, a bit of an upturn. But overall, with the lackluster play, and does this exonerate the Randolph or the folks who follow him? For some reason, I'm getting...
Willie Randolph is a very good manager, and
yeah,
I think that
does
he...
Does this exonerate them just to say, well, it wasn't their preparedness or whatnot, but it was just the players themselves? But they haven't gotten better under, like, three regimes so far. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, I think Willie, if anything, took a lot of unnecessary heat. I think Delgado docked it under his watch. I think Willie got the most he could out of, frankly, an aging talent pool. And the funny thing about Willie is that his media skills, you know, like a lot of new managers, it took a while to learn. It was funny. In his final weeks, he actually came funny. We got to see the wit of Willie Randolph and a side of him that I wish he had shown from the beginning. And how he was treated was just an abomination. There's just no two ways about it. I think if you ask any Met fan right now, who'd they rather see, Terry Collins or Willie Randolph there, I think we know what the answer would be.
Yeah,
well,
you know, we'll take it.
Yeah, the great line that
all
you
right,
have back, a point.
I'm in.
Okay, we've got Destino Lois, who's finally joined us. Destino, we've got, of course, WDF star Melson Jr., but Lord Carroll has joined us, the man who is the... who runs the Queen side of sports, one of the disciples of the true sports writing art. And we've been talking, Dusty, with Lloyd about the Mets. And Lloyd has alluded to the fact that, you know, the situation is a lot more serious than is being revealed or that it appears to be. And two, that a lot of the problems that are here are not just Manoff. I mean, what they're doing, it reminds me of a police situation where you lock up a guy and you lock them up for two or three crimes in the neighborhood. You know what? You add the other three crimes, and so now you say, you know what? We solved five cases, but he really didn't do the five robberies. And what Lloyd is saying here, a lot of problems that the Mets have is not totally from the situation of the Manoff situation. And Lloyd would have a tremendous part. You know, Doubleday as a baseball guy, you know, if we look back, the one thing he did do, he brought Mike Piazza. Dusty, your feelings on the Mets?
Well, the thing with the Mets is that they were in disarray with the Madoff scandal, you know, and they didn't do what the Yankees or any other team was doing, was just to shore themselves up with new ball players and money makers who could probably put the Mets at a level that they should have been, which you know, of which they're not. You know, they kept the same guys. Okay, they got rid of Castillo, and they got rid of some other guys who were producing, but they didn't do anything. So they got Pelfrey, and they kept these other guys. And Pelfrey is still the same, in my opinion, mediocre pitcher. So they took care of Arizona today or last week. They beat Arizona for three straight times, but then all the other teams are going to beat them up. So I just don't know what they're thinking. And this manager here, who's happy to be a manager of the major leagues, I don't know what his philosophy is. You know, so I think the Mets are in disarray. You got to go back to the Mets of 69, 62.
Well, I don't think they're that bad, Dusty. I mean, there's a lot of talent plays here.
They are not good at all, period.
Lloyd,
they're
going to
lose 100 games, Doc.
Lloyd,
they're going to lose 100 games.
Absolutely. They are going to lose
100
games.
Are they that bad, Lloyd?
Well, yeah, again, I can see, and I understand Nessie's point. I compare them more to the kind of the late 70s Mets. Not quite as bad as their early 60s Casey Stengel era, but I think you can make an argument of like the Mets right after Tom Seaver was given away to the Cincinnati Reds, that kind of 78, 79 feel of, and you're right, they could lose 100. They might even surprise they get in the 70s close to even 500. You could make an argument everything breaks right that they could. You know, and that's really what the 70s Mets were about. I mean, you're not going to get excited over them. They really are the JV team. I think you're going to see what happens this week, particularly next weekend when they go to Philadelphia. Even the players admitted this is a true litmus test for them. They can't just look like a bunch of little leaguers against Roy Halladay next week.
Right. Exactly. They're going to be the players or the team or the franchise that is going to begin to give away hundreds of tickets to little league teams and community organizations to fill up the stadiums.
They could have used them today. It was a ghost town there.
Yeah, because they're not going to win anything. I mean, they're back to those eras where they just so happy.
And the thing we're saying here too, and which Lloyd, and we're delighted to have you on the show, and they're going to put so much of this on the Manoff situation, and it's really been a situation that they've been deteriorating for, what, the last half decade or more, Lloyd?
I would say so. Yeah, I could make the argument since 2006 when a lot of people point this out when Carlos Beltran struck out against Adam Wainwright. It's been a downhill situation.
Wow. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soldiers, Sports and Depth, the show. Did Sea Wings join us yet? Okay, we're looking for Sea Wings. Lonnie Bradley, you in yet?
Do you think
I don't see him yet. Not yet.
Sea Wings, are you with us yet? Hold on, Dusty. Sea Wings?
No, I don't see him yet.
Okay. And we're looking for Lonnie Bradley. Okay, gentlemen, you're talking about Mets. Mets is a good garden today. They're swept in four games. They made the playoffs after this long absence. Is there a positive that we can take today, Lloyd, from the Knicks getting to the playoffs and getting swept in four games?
Well, I mean, considering they weren't even in the playoffs for a number of years, I think that, you know, for us to complain about it, look, I mean, even if Amari Stoudemire was the most perfect health, even if Carmelo Anthony was at the top of his game, he showed that, And even if a few things had broken right in Boston the first two games when they came close, they still were not going to win the best of seven against the Celtics no matter what. I think the Celtics...
You bring a point up, as Will Pond said earlier. He said, you know what? Boston is simply a better basketball team. And they're a better coached basketball team. End of conversation.
Yeah, well, they have the talent. There's no look, you know what's funny, Doc? I don't know if you were at the Garden. I remember the first game of the year the Knicks played. That was the shot where Amari Stoudemire hit a shot at the split second after the buzzer, and the Knicks lost by two, 118-116. And what was interesting about that game, what nobody talked about, was is that Boston had better real estate the whole night. Even though the score was very close, the Knicks had to be perfect. They were sharpshooters from 30 feet out, 25 feet out, but when it came to easy baskets, the Celtics controlled everything. They were making layups. The Knicks had to take every shot from at least 25 feet out, and they made it. That's the reason the game was that close.
Mm-hmm.
But that told me more than I needed to know. When it came to rebounding, it was non-existent for the Knicks, where the Celtics were just getting layups. It was amazing. When you watch it, you think you're watching two NBA teams here. You couldn't believe the score. If somebody just blindfolded you and lift the blindfold, you wouldn't know what was – you couldn't believe the score was that close.
Wow.
Absolutely. And when you have the Knicks, who lost to the Boston Celtics during the season, four straight games, I mean, how the heck are you going to think that they're going to beat them in the playoffs?
Wasn't going to happen.
And then they should have won those two games in Boston. I mean, one-point games. And what? Come on. I mean, this is an example of the fact that they were not going to do anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be fair to the Celtics, I mean, they are a very good team. And you know what? Good teams are great teams when they win games they shouldn't win. And that's what happened the first two games.
You know exactly. Lloyd, you hit it right, and this is why you're right. You know, those games that you shouldn't win, you do win. It's the off-speed changer that you happen to hit, and you blew it in the right center field, and he had you fooled, but you still got the base hit. And that's why you're 300 hitting another guy's 257. Doc Stanley, Sports Devil on the Blake. Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, Tim, Sports Devil, the show. We're talking Knicks. We've talked the Mets. We've got some football to talk about. Lonnie Bradley, the last middleweight champion to come from Harlem and from New York, since Ray Robinson will be joining us. Lately, we'll probably try to get Harold Weston Jr. Sea Wings will be here as we'll talk some NFL, and Lord will give us some insight on that, too. And also, we're looking for Lady A to join us. Doc Stanley, Sports Network, on the Blake. Radio Network, Rainbow Souls, here on Sports Network, the show, Sundays, 10 to midnight, right here. We've got Ivy League in the house. Lord, got gentlemen, here's a question, and we're going to start up with Lloyd again. Are we going to have a football strike, Lloyd, or what?
Oh, sure. You know, there's, and again, I'm not going to be an originator here, there's just too much money involved here. Let's look at it from the net.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always believe follow the money has always been my mantra. Right now, there's no big deal. Even the players, the owners all say there's no pressure in April. I mean, it's not a big deal lockout. It's just only negotiating tactic. But let's even say we get to training camp and there's still a lockout. Do you think that Leslie Moonves of CBS, that Dick Ebersole of NBC, and George Bottenheimer of ESPN are going to sit there and suck their thumbs and say, here you go, Roger Goodell and the boys, here's our TV money, and, you know, of course, we don't mind the fact that we can't sell any advertising spots, so we're going to take it on the chin both ways, paying you and getting no revenue in return. Do you actually see that happening in America? I don't.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I think that at that point, Goodell will be called in with the owners and say, told in no uncertain terms, cut a deal. America is not going to go for the upward redistribution of wealth. That's what the owners really want. There is not one owner in that league that can say they're losing money. Not one owner. Are there some that are doing better than others? Sure, but you know what? This isn't a utility. This is private enterprise.
They're not
losing money. They're making money.
Of course
money.
Not. Nobody even claimed.
So
and they're going to go along with the draft. I mean, everybody looking forward to the draft where they say, where is Cam Newton going to? I mean, this is a franchise player. And whoever gets him is going to be in the driver's seat. I mean, this is a money business. This is a money business that they can start late in the season or whatever, and they're still going to have a season of a full football season.
They're going to get it.
This whole thing's so ridiculous, Dusty and Panel. What makes it even more ridiculous is arguably this. quite frankly, could be when they're at their most popular. This is when they're just most popular, and possibly you could say it's overtaken baseball as the nation's number one pastime.
Well, actually, they have overtaken baseball. And I'll tell you, Doc, it was a funny business story. They got no publicity whatsoever this week. Speaking of baseball, Bud Selig, Michael Wiener, the president of the Players Association, and Dan Foster, who's the president of the Baseball Alumni Association, kind of like the equivalent of the retired football players, the current players, and ownership.
So like that, maybe?
Exactly. Well, what they did is they announced that they were going to give extra pension money to players who had just missed out from 1947 to 79. Now, it wasn't a lot of money. I mean, the most that each player would get would be $10,000, which is coffee and cake money for, you know, the way sports is these days. But the reason, though, they held, and I asked Bud Selig this, I said, look, it's a very nice thing you're doing. But let me ask you this. Is part of the reason that you're doing this, kind of the impetus, is to show how baseball has its house in order, while football, which for years has been crowing about how they're the new American pastime, now you have the kind of the three-way gunfight between the retired players association, the current players, and the owners. Isn't this kind of setting a message and kind of you know, putting a little salt in their wound? And Selig, of course, never denied that, but said, well, you know, we're a social institution. Social institutions have, I believe, have social responsibility. He said all the pious things that you expect to hear in an Easter sermon today. But there's no question part of it was, as much as it's funny, as much as baseball owners may not care for their players, they hate the NFL even worse. So they were happy to throw a few shekels to the players and sing Kumbaya together just so they can send a message to Roger Goodell. This didn't get a lot of play, but it also indicates to me that even though baseball's collective bargaining agreement ends next year, they'll cut a deal. They do not want to go where the NFL is. They're going to enjoy watching the NFL tear each other apart.
Exactly. I believe it.
Doc,
I believe it.
Up on the Blake Radio Rainbow Social. Lord, let's do the background. Lord, are you – some background. Where are you from originally, Lord? New York?
Philadelphia.
Okay, give us Philadelphia. Born and raised in Philly?
Yeah, but I've spent a good chunk of my life, so I don't want to overplay the Philadelphia thing. I mean, my parents moved when I was in public school, so, you know, I've really been here in Queens a long time, but, I always like to give my old hometown, my old stomping grounds there a little play as well.
Mm-hmm. And when and what brought you to New York City?
My parents, actually. My dad was working down there and got a job up here, so... and I would have gone back, except Columbia gave me a few more bucks than Penn, so I wound up staying in New York.
Ivy League. And what's the Ivy League life like? I mean, the Ivy League guys have just, you know, you're the cerebral guys. It's a whole other world. What's Ivy League life like there, Lloyd?
Well, you know, I guess every person has their own impressions of it. I was not that impressed, per se. I mean, you have some that... I mean, look, I like the fact that you can think for yourself that I guess there is a certain cachet that goes with it, but I never got into the snobbish appeal of it. I just want to make sure that that's clear. I enjoyed the fact that you could have debates. I like the fact that there was a lot of, you could meet some very right-wing people on an Ivy League campus and some very left-wing people, and it's an interesting atmosphere. I will definitely give it that.
Right wing now. Tell our fans what right wing and left wing is now.
Oh, I mean, you could have the socialists versus the people who think that Sarah Palin is too liberal. I mean, you've got...
oh, my.
Who make the Tea Party people look like a bunch of commies.
Sarah Palin and Donald Trump. They're all the same.
We got him here. Did C-Wings join us yet?
C-Wings,
we want you to join in. We've got Lloyd Carroll. In fact, Lloyd, you know, we're here on Sundays from 10 to midnight. If we'd like you to be a part of this panel, if you want to join us weekly, we'd love to have you here.
Well, I tell you what, I appreciate the open invite, and the only thing I always worry, sometimes Sunday nights is when I have to get my column in. So.
What we're saying, on a Sunday night, you got nothing to do from 10 to 12, you'd be here with us. You know.
Well, I do appreciate it. I got my other life, as you know, Doc, I'm also an accounting educator. I teach over at Borough Manhattan Community College, so I have 8 o'clock in the morning classes, so it's hard for me to burn the midnight oil as I'm getting older.
C-Wings, Lloyd had just alluded to the fact that from a financial standpoint of view, come what may, we're going to have a football season. C-Wings?
Oh, there's no question.
Well, I think the NFL learned something from its previous work stoppage, the damage that it can do, in 1987, when the games were lost, and you look at the revenue that the NFL generates, which is the highest is somewhere between $11 and $14 billion a year with the advertisements, the revenue from the television contracts, you know, so on and so forth, from the endorsements, the equipment, the fan, like the jerseys and different things
souvenirs,
like that.
Yeah.
They cannot afford to do that. Look at the NHL. They really still haven't recovered from losing an entire season. I mean, I don't even think you're going to see that in the NBA. I think come October 1st, you're going to have a football, basketball season. And I agree. I think the NFL will, the players and the owners, from what the reports are coming out, they want to get this over with.
Right.
But the biggest problem is with the revenue sharing. That seems to be the big
why is that such a problem?
I mean, you know, the owners who basically run the league and hire the players, they feel that, I guess, the billions of dollars that they do make each year is just not enough for them.
Well,
I mean,
the 87 strike. The 87 strike, what happens, a lot of named players cross the picket line. These owners for years have enjoyed browbeating the players. They really have. And the Players Association, unlike baseball, has been fairly weak in football. It's funny, all these big macho...
But why is that, though?
It's an interesting question. I think because of the fact that there are 45 as opposed to, let's say, 25 on a team, so there's more personalities involved. I think because the careers are a lot shorter, there's not the same camaraderie. There's a feeling of, well, we got to get our – even though you think that would lead to strikes, nobody wants to lose any time, where with baseball, all right, if we're out a few months, well, look, we're still going to have a good long career. Apparently, in football, it's like a racehorse, you know, that you can only stay 3 years old forever and run the Derby. Any lost time, you can't do that. And I think that's all worked against players, that they have to – there's always that new rookie crop coming up that is big in football, not as important as other sports as it is in the NFL.
I thought him real quick. You know, something that I thought was kind of comical the other day, and they were talking about that Hughes was having some arm problems, and I'm thinking, how could a guy, today's pitcher, who's babied so much, remind me of that great line that Johnny Unitas said, that the way they take care of quarterbacks, that they should be wearing skirts. How could a guy in today's game have arm problems? These guys are just pitching up as it is.
Yeah, I don't know Phil's particular case, but you could make a good point that by constantly watching pitch counts, instead of developing arm strength, you actually get weaker. You can make that,
right.
You know, build endurance.
Lloyd, you're saying exactly what Nolan Ryan is. I remember Tom Seaver, man, around the batting cage, and I said, you know, I said, wow. I said, you know, if you were around today, I said, no, you win 500 games. He said, what do you mean? I said, dang, man, you should go, you know, 7 innings and bullpen. Because I was just saying it, and I really hadn't digested everything. And I'll never forget what Tom told me. He said, that's bullshit. He said, you got to pitch every 4 days, and you got to go at least 7 innings for the arm. Nolan Ryan, you know, he's not having any choaches down there in Texas. Man, these guys just got to pitch. And you look, I've said today that there will never be another 300-game winner in the history of Major League Baseball because the guy goes seven. I mean, CC had a couple of games won that where he took the guy out after 7 good innings. He brings him. I don't see another 300 winner in the game of baseball ever again the way they're pitching guys today.
You're right.
Blow your quarter?
For sure.
Yeah. Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio, Rainbow Center Sports Network show. Is Lonnie Bradley joining us yet?
Yeah.
Okay, Lonnie. Okay, we're going to talk boxing.
Lonnie Bradley. Oh, my Lord.
The 1103 Big C. Can we get a commercial plug in real quick, and then we'll talk to a little boxing with the man, the last
You know,
man.
Doc, I'm going to let you go here. I got to burn the midnight oil, but it's
okay,
been
Lloyd,
a pleasure, and I'm going to listen in, so I appreciate being part of
God
this tonight.
Bless you.
Okay, and Lloyd, the door is always open.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I will come back, Doc. You got my word.
Okay.
Thanks
Lloyd
a lot.
Carroll. You know, Lloyd's amazing, you know, because, you know, they tell you that they don't know who you are. And the Lloyd is for a weekly paper. I've sent you a lot of his articles. And you know, I've learned so much from reading this guy's articles, you know, the little things and the big things that he inputs into his stories, things that, like this whole Wilpon thing, where he's interjected so much that hasn't been talked about, yet so unknown.
And, you know, he has been sort of boycotted from certain press boxes because of his insightfulness and the righteousness of what he writes. And you know, these PR people are trying to tell a guy like him that he can't come in, but yet you open the doors. Like, during the basketball season, when the playoffs come, all of a sudden, the Times and the News and the Post, they're adding two more guys to cover the playoffs. And we say, okay, there's no problem with that. But now, why, if they're going to add two more guys, why do the two more guys they add have to wind up sitting in the seats that we've been sitting in all year at courtside, and we got to go upstairs? I mean, you know, we've been covering you all year, so now all of a sudden you got this guy, and it's understood he's doing a side story anyway. So he's not even doing a game story. So, you know, but Lloyd has been one of the true sports writers and intellectuals of this game, and the kind of guy that should be acknowledging and one of the Pulitzer Prize winner. But we got Lonnie here. Big C, are you still with us?
Yes.
We're going to do a commercial plug. We're going to talk boxing, and I'm going to shoot a quick basketball question, too, before we go. The Knicks lost today. They're done. Miami Heat lost today. They're still ahead 3-1, and we'll be right back in a minute. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake. We're the Nippon Rainbow Soul Sports Network, the show. Big C, hit the control button, will you?
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
It is Resurrection Sunday. It's amazing, I thought, of how, I was talking today, of how much of the church is really not the church. I mean, you know, Easter, you know, when you're growing up as a kid, it's a fantastic. But as you get old, you say, well, wait a minute, what does Easter eggs and bunny rabbits and chocolate candy have to do with the resurrection of Christ? And then you find out that Easter, too, was a holiday adapted from, you know, a pagan holiday as Christmas. You know, Christmas, December 25th, is not Christ's birthday. It's a holiday adapted from a pagan holiday. I mean, Christ, for all intents and purposes, was born about October. About October, you know, when the shepherds were still out in the field and everything. So his birthday is near the first, second week of October. But it's just amazing how many of these holidays in the church are really not righteous. Even like the Last Supper, you know, you see all these pictures of them sitting at the table. They did not sit at a table. They were sitting on the ground. But, you know, you see these pictures of them sitting at a table. They,
yeah, what is this all about is what you and I shared this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Your moms, I haven't seen her in so long, and the nephews and the nieces and the families, the in-laws and the outlaws. We had a great time today. I hadn't seen you facially how long?
Don't bring it up. Don't, because I didn't have a good time today sitting there with you, your dog biting at my feet. You know, he's got his dog on the chain.
Every now and then, sick doc.
You know what I mean? Dusty had his operation. Hadn't seen him, we've heard him, but didn't get to see him face to face since he had the kneecap replacement. And my daughter had all the family out at her house today. Demony's house is such that even the dogs have a spot in the house. Everybody's walking around with the dog on the leash. You know what I mean?
Doc? I think a lot of, like how you say about these holidays and stuff like that, you have to look at it from an economic standpoint as well.
A lot of these holidays
are driven by economics.
Some businesses thrive
on Christmas. That's one day keeps some businesses
in business,
the whole year.
I remember my first time in Panama, and it was in October. And they had Christmas stuff out already. Now you talk about one day. I remember the Downtown Athletic Club, okay? They lived and thrived solely off doing the Heisman Awards. You know, I mean, that one thing.
Absolutely.
But I was just saying, just looking at, you know, I remember Jerry Eisenberg one time said, you know, if they just told history the way it was, and it's just from a religious standpoint of view, just taking time out, you know, if you kind of don't really acknowledge what Christ went through for us. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you just kind of understand. I mean, if you took the richest person in the world and supplanted them in that situation, it's no way far remotely comparable to come from heaven. To come from heaven to be God. I mean, you know, you look at Christ. You know, his sisters and brothers, here he's raising the dead, walking on water, and they're like, yeah, okay, so what? He ain't the Son of God. You know what I mean? I mean, you take the whole thing, like we talked about last week, like Palm Sunday. Okay, in less than a week, he's gone from Hosanna, okay? Hosanna, free us now, to, mm-hmm. I mean, and then being, I mean, in those days, you were tied on the cross. You weren't nailed on the cross. He was nailed on the cross. I mean, you just can't comprehend. We just want to know if all of us all give all praise and honor to God. Lonnie Bradley is with us here. Gentlemen, here's a question real quickly. You know, I couldn't understand. And what we got to do, C-Wings, if you get a chance, can you get Lady A, tell her to get with us. I can't understand how Reggie Miller was not on the ballot for induction into the NBA Hall of Fame. Talk to me, Dusty.
Doc, your statement is as mysterious to me as it is to you. Why Reggie Miller could not have been in the Hall of Fame? I don't know. What do these guys think? What do they feel? How do they select the players?
I mean, I thought Reggie Miller should have been on the list for one of the
first
50 greatest players.
First ballot, man.
You know, and it's got to be a first ballot. I mean, until we had this guy Allen come along, he was the number one all-time three-point shooter.
Yeah,
and I mean, and he could have lived off what he did against the Knicks alone. I mean,
absolutely.
I was at that game.
He had a big stage, Doc. I mean, he was always doing it from
the Knicks.
Man, I mean,
answer to that question lies, if you can find an answer as to why Sylvester Stallone is being inducted into the Doctor the Hall of Fame, I think the answer would lie there why Reggie Miller is not being voted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. I guess that's a mystery, like, you know, the same as where can we find Jimmy Hoffa? I mean, this is like...
Ladies and gentlemen, our next mayor, Cedric Raymond. You know what I mean? Oh, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gentlemen, Marion Boykin, who I asked to join us, but he probably busy, the greatest boxing show in the history of the world, not the United States, not in the history of the world, Boykin on Boxing. And he started talking to me about this guy named Lonnie Bradley. Young, good-looking, middleweight, out of Harlem. And
Hollywood face.
Oh yeah, and he touted him the way he did. You know, Marion brought Lonnie and Roy Jones to the forefront on the legendary Boykin on Boxing. Lonnie Bradley won the middleweight champ, became the first middleweight champion from New York City
since
Walker Smith Jr. AKA
exactly.
Gentlemen, he's at your disposal. He's here now. You can cross examine. You can work him over. I bring to you a great champion. And that's how I met him. Okay, I'm up in Harlem Friday night, and I wanted to go get a fish sandwich. There's a place up there, 104th and Nicholas. I mean, the place is just great.
Oh, your old cultural back home to get the fish food.
And not only that, I mean, the place is always jammed. So I go, the line's kind of big. I double back, tell the guy, I go back. Now, I when I come back, I'm like 8 spots further back. So I get on the line, and I'm standing there, and this guy comes up behind me, Yankee cap on, leather jacket. I really don't pay a lot of attention to him. And I just stand there, and then I'm thinking, Stan, Doc. I look, there he is. Ladies and gentlemen, the middleweight champion of the world, the first middleweight champion of the world from New York since Ray Robinson. Gentlemen, he's at your disposal, the one and only, the incomparable Lonnie Bradley. Lonnie, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine, you guys. You guys sound real good out there, man.
Dusty, go at him, baby. I know you got the first 10 questions.
Lonnie Bradley, I'm going to hit you with 5, 6, 7, 8 left hooks. First of all.
I'm going to weave them all.
You're going to beat them all. First of all, when, unfortunately, your injury occurred, were you allowed to retain your middleweight championship, or did they take it away from you because of the fact of your injury?
They took it away from me from the fact of my injury.
Wow, man. See, that's where boxing fails. Here's a man who has won and done so much.
A credit to the game. You never heard nothing about Lonnie Bradley was never in a car accident. He never was drunk. A credit to the game. You know what I mean? All he brought was credibility. One of these guys that dispelled the rumor of boxing being his dirty, seedy business. I mean, and, you know, here's a guy that, you know, you don't want to lose in the game, Dusty.
Absolutely. Yeah, right.
I appreciate that, guys. Thanks. It means a lot.
Yeah. When you called me the other day and said, look, I ran into Lonnie Bradley, I said, my God, where the heck has he been, man? I mean, what the heck has he been doing for himself? I mean, the man was one of, you know, our icon in the middleweight division, man. And that would have been so great, man. You know, it's unfortunate, of course, you get a career-ending injury. But here you got the commissions or whoever the political pundits are to turn around and take away something that he earned the hard way.
Yes, yes. I didn't, you know, at the time, I thought it was being something unjustly done, you know. But, you know, I said, well, these guys doing this, I really don't want these guys to try to make a skeptical out of me as far as, you know, the eye injury, you know, because I was planning on still competing. So
right.
I didn't want that to be the focus of me relinquishing the belt.
Right, right.
You know, so unfortunately, I never really got the chance to get back to the top. You know, but you know, I'm still able to compete and actually win. You know, the remaining fights I had.
Right.
Being in the sport of boxing.
When did the injury occur, and how severe was it, Lonnie?
Well, it occurred in 1997. The severeness of it was a, you know, between 5 and 7 o'clock tear. But I guess overall, it was a choice that I had to make. You know, either I can get the eye fixed.
Right.
Or, you know, continue to fight. And it just gets worse, and overall, ultimately, I would lose the eyesight and that altogether. So it was a choice that I made under those circumstances. I figured, well, let me get the surgery done now. In that way, I can at least come back to the sport for 6 months. And, you know, and that's what I was thinking about. So it didn't work that way. You know, it took me out for a whole year, and I had a process of you know, just getting back in the thick of things, but now I'm under a new management, you know?
Right.
I'm under a new management, which, you know, I guess it goes back to the old saying that you have to, if you're going to be in any business, you got to, people that's with you got to know the business as well. And, you know, people that had money for it, they wasn't very knowledgeable. They were good people, but, you know, in the sport of boxing, to really get to the top, it has to really be, strategically move with the right people. And, you know, so in a nutshell, like I said, it wasn't that experience. We made some decisions which prolonged the comeback. And, you know, I didn't want to, you know, sit around, keep waiting, and end up, you know, my life going nowhere. So I think I had to make some choices, either, you know, go into boxing or, you know, try to work. And living with my kids, and you know, that's what I did.
I have a question, Lonnie. First of all, happy Easter to everyone on the panel.
Thank you.
And the guests you pulled in.
Thank you.
Listen, Sue Wings, ask the question. Cut this happy Easter stuff. This ain't your show. This is the Doc Stanley show. Just come here like everybody else on the panel and be a panel member, okay?
Okay,
Easter,
Doc.
All right?
Easter
okay.
Egg hunt. Okay.
do you think that the way boxing itself is structured with the trainers, you know, the way that contracts are made, and just the way that everything is structured with the boxer itself, do you think that with every other sport like boxing, I mean like baseball, football, basketball, do you think that it would be advantageous for the boxers to form some sort of boxing union to protect their rights?
Yes, you know, it can be that way. But in boxing, you know, it's like politics, you know what I mean? You know, you have people that bond together so that way they can make Viv and Zamin. And so the fighters, you know, they're paid individually with a self-employed type of army staff, you know. So once a fighter gets his money, the brain goes numb. They don't want to follow the diligent for, you know, an organization where fighters can actually run together against the promoters and managers. But in a nutshell, these managers, it's like the old, in old days, managers, they take care of the fighter. You know, they pay for the fighter's livelihood. So he can, you know, go on and be a successful boxer, unless the boxer has family around, you know, or, you know, good people in the corner. So for them to form a, you know, an organization like that, you know, it has to be sort of a unity, a camaraderie with, you know, boxers throughout the years, you know, the time that they put in the sport. And when they gain respect for one another, and they realize that, you know, I got to this point, and we both got to this point, you know, what's left for us now, you know, so when it's all said and done, when the bell is stopped ringing, what are we going to do? So they never think about those things, but, you know, that's because they're living life in the fast lane.
So you think it has more of a structure like the music industry, like how you explain that, you know, everyone more or less gets their cut first as far as, like, the managers and promoters?
Yes.
It's like,
yes,
in the
it's
music
sort of
industry.
It's structured like the music business, you know. Right. It's structured like the music business, you know, so. But there's a very few that come into the sport that have to decide, well, would I want to be the light or the switch? You know, they come in thinking the light, so that way they get a chance to shine. But the ultimate goal is to become a switch where no one, where you control your own destiny or your own, you know, things that's happening around you.
Right. Okay, thank you so much.
Would it be better off if we franchise the boxing industry as we would look at the Major League Baseball, or the basketball, or the football, where there is a pension, where there is a union, where there's one commissioner, universal commissioner, who will look over the business of boxing and make sure that the players, or vis-a-vis the boxers, are taken care of. For example,
well,
you take all these draft choices. These guys
mm-hmm.
coming out of college or
listen,
coming
listen,
out of
know, can I say something? Now, on that note, right, boxing is really the only sport that you don't have to go to a four-year college or
exactly.
have some type of education to
right.
become a professional athlete to live that kind of life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's sort of a reward for the football players, the basketball players,
mm-hmm.
because they have scholarship funds and they have an education
right.
and whatnot, you know, to back them up.
And Harold Weston is on the line
well,
there with
many
us.
Years
hold
ago,
on, hold on, Dusty.
Yeah.
Harold? Lonnie Bradley,
yeah.
Lonnie, say hi to Harold Weston.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing just great. How's everything?
Everything's good, man.
You've been tuning in. Lonnie, another gifted guy from the New York area. Quite a young man, Harold.
Okay.
Harold?
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
Yeah, Lonnie Bradley, good little fighter there.
What I was trying to say is that you mentioned the fact that kids for baseball, basketball, football dropped out of college. Many years ago, we used to have a boxing program with scholarships in boxing. But because of the fact that the injury factor was so severe, other than baseball, football, and basketball, it was ruled out. Very few colleges today have a boxing program. I remember one of my kids who I knew, who I trained with, Charlie Moore, was killed in a boxing tournament, intercollegiate tournament. And because of that, he had a brain scan or whatever the heck it was, a blood clot. And because of the fact that he was killed, a lot of the colleges dropped boxing as part of a scholarship of rendering sport.
Yeah, now Harold, and you had an eye injury that
because you're divorced from boxing. And that's been so unfair with boxing. You know, a guy gets killed as a football player. A guy gets killed as a baseball player. And it goes on. But as soon as it happens to a boxer,
exactly.
Harold, all the negatives come about. Why is that, Harold?
Well, I mean, because everybody knows that. I guess they assume that boxing is a brutal sport. And that the reason to be in the sport is to harm the other guy. But it's more, you know, people not looking at the overall picture. And that's the reason why when boxing went before the Congress and was supposed to be banned from the sport, and they found out the real issue of boxing was the technique of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really there to hurt nobody. But unfortunately, at that particular time in those
people
years, you just had better fighters and they were killers. I mean, that was
wow.
just
yeah, that's true. Because when I was coming up from the sport, I'm sorry, Harold, I'm going to catch
yeah.
you on. When I was coming up, in order for them to really consider you a top professional or a top boxer, you would have at least put 10 to 15 years in the sport before you really actually moved on to fight a bigger and stronger, you know, opponent.
Well, you know, it wasn't that many years, but you did have to put
well,
your, you had
I mean,
to pay, pay your
developed.
You had to pay
you
your
know?
Dues. And,
right.
and the fact is that you know, you was going to be tested as you went along in the sport. And I mean, that's the reason why boxing was so good and so unique, because guys had to really fight guys. It's not
exactly.
like it is today where, you know, the promoters are trying to line their pockets with money to make sure that their fighters win the fight and get to the
well, it's
know,
about entertainment today. Back then, it was all about strategic moves.
And the thing that we're living with today is that, you know, you pretty much got, and I can say the word, I mean, Don tried to put it out there, but, you know, you're living in a slavery time situation. Because
yeah,
the promoter
yeah.
pretty much is your keeper. And if he's your keeper, he's going to keep you in there where you're going to fight easy fights, where that took the way, that took the life out of boxing, because it's not where it should be at this particular time, and people can see that. And the thing is that the talent is not that great, because the fighters don't have a platform to fight on to show their talent, and the trainers that are good trainers are out because they can't take their fighters nowhere, because you got to sit around and wait for your promoter to get a fight, and he's only going to be promoted like one fight or three fights for the year or four fights a year, and that doesn't keep a fighter active. Fighters like to stay active.
Oh, yeah.
All right? And then that's what the downfall of the game is all about. And when Madison Square Garden closed, that was the end of the situation. So, I mean, you know, until we get a platform where these young men can really show their talent and really get out there and fight on a constant basis on a platform that is going to be a steady program for them, that's when you're going to get trainers that's going to be coming back to train fighters, and you're going to get fighters, people that want
to
be fighters.
It's a livelihood that you have to be ready to live for.
Yeah,
you know?
In reality, how could a fighter, just like a ball player or a basketball player or a football player, play every other day when this is the hurt business? When like you said, Harold, I mean, you're going to get banged up all over the place. So you get banged up, you get a victory, and then next week with all your injuries, you're going to play again. I mean, you're going to fight again the following week when you're still injured. I mean, this
well,
is why. I mean, why boxing
well,
is still.
Well, boxing has evolved.
Well, the thing is the bottom line. You need good trainers, and you have to have a good management team, and they know when to keep you going and when not to keep you going. And that's the whole problem with the game. We don't have good quality trainers and good quality managers that know what they're doing, and that's the downfall, because the managers are not working no more. They're the promoter. The promoter tells you when to fight. He tells you when you go, how much money you're gonna make. He's going, you know, he guides you. So the manager's just sitting there and say, okay, John, all right, okay, I'll be there. And then he's getting 33% for what? He's not
right.
doing us.
He's like, just like now when I just realized that Manny Pacquiao is getting $22 million and Shane Rose is getting $5 million for a big
he's
fight. I mean, my God, is this is real? I mean, am I reading at the, you know, this is so crazy.
Hold on a second.
This guy's been doing this sport for over 20, 25 years, you know? And it would be unfair, you know, for them guys to not get the money that they do.
Well, so
NBA basketball.
Hold on just a second. I've got a feedback somewhere. I need that. Hold on, Lonnie.
Okay. Okay, good. It's gone now. Okay. Gentlemen, when you're on the phone, I need you to be cognizant of your background sounds, as your phone is your microphone, so we don't need any unnecessary
feedback.
Feedback. And Dusty, we always feel we don't need you unnecessarily anyway. But
okay, I can go home and sleep.
But yeah, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Sports Network, the show. Lonnie Bradley is in the house. Harold Weston Jr. Center, baby Lois, and always little Coco Mel Smith Jr. Sea Wings. And earlier we had Lloyd Carroll, who was the sports writer eminent out in Queens. Real quickly, we'll try to get a hold of Hoops. And one more time, we also are dedicating this show to his late mother, Helen Hart. You know, Hoops lost his mother earlier this week. He's our basketball maven. We'll try to maybe catch him to come in. Lady A, hopefully she could drop in for a minute or two, because we've got Lonnie Bradley and Harold Weston in the house, and you know how everybody feels about Harold. Harold, and Lonnie,
yes.
One, two, answer the question.
Harold and Lonnie, yeah. I got a question for them both, Doc, if I may.
Rooney, go ahead, baby. Rooney, go ahead. It's your platform.
Well, Lonnie, if you're on a, you know, the panel, Harold always, and just, you know, the fighters. I come from a wrestling background, so I know about the hurt and the pain in a different capacity. But my question to the fighters on the panel is this. What is a common misconception? If you had to tell the public something that they think that they know, but it's kind of a common misconception and it's not what they think it is, in other words, what would it be? I mean, are you actually taking more punishment than they think you are? Do you actually have to do more road work and come in and more conditioned than they ever mind? What is it that the public thinks they know that would, you know, really kind of pull their coat to and let them know it's not what you think, this is the real deal about this?
Not everyone's a fighter, you know. Not everyone want to take the time out to learn a craft because it's such a brutal sport that they can just go in there and be physically strong and overpower everyone. But it's not. It's really a thinking man's game. You know, when
right.
you outthink your opponent, you know, mentally and physically, which breaks him down, where he just wants to give up. You know, that's the main thing. You're there to make your opponent give up. You know, if you can get a quick knockout.
Because the reason I ask you guys this is because, you know, everybody has a friend, a Big Steve, a Big John, or such and such, and everybody seems to have a friend that they think, you know, if Steve worked out with those guys for a month, Steve could hang out with those guys. Steve could go a couple of rounds with those guys. And, you know, when I used to do cable, so I would go on and say that, you know, your friend might be good among y'all. Like when Mike Tyson was knocking everybody out, and guys were like, oh, this guy's a bum, that guy's a bum, this guy's a bum, that guy's a bum. But the dude that Mike just knocked out would take your friend out in 30 seconds. This is what guys do, you know,
absolutely.
But these men are professionals. You know, that's what guys like. You know, that's what guys do to eat.
Everyone can go in that ring and fight.
Yeah, it makes a lot of hard to do that. It makes a lot of hard to do that, Lonnie. And unless you've gotten in there and walked that aisle and climbed up those steps, folks have no idea the courage that it takes to do that.
Absolutely.
I mean, you guys. I don't know if you like to classify it this way, and I mean it with nothing but respect. But you have, because you know, you guys are like modern day warriors, gladiators.
Absolutely. I used to watch. I was Joe Miceli's sparring partner. I was Gaspar Ortega's sparring partner. I was hired to do a week with Kid Gavilan. I used to look at those dudes. I said, man, I won 4 rounds with a dude. What makes me think I can't beat the sucker in the 10th round? I mean, really. I used to go to the Uptown Gym and watch Sugar Ray Robinson train. I said, man, what makes me think I can't beat this sucker? I mean, this is how your mindset is, man. These guys are tough dudes, but you were also a tough dude. And you say, man, I'm just as good as these suckers. But, of course,
but
they're the ones.
Been tested,
yeah, they're the ones. But look, I used to train with Danny Giovinelli, Jackie Labour, Mel Owens. I mean, Virgil Akins. Vince Martinez, the welterweight champ. I mean, and I'm saying 2, 3, 4, 5 rounds. I used to spar with these guys. I said, man, I could stop the heck out of these guys. I could beat these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how your mindset works. You know, that you could feel that you could beat these guys because you trade with him or you looked at him. I never was far with Sugar Ray Robinson, but I looked at him and I said, man, maybe I could get my left hook on him. I could hurt him.
Yeah.
But that's your mindset, you know.
That's exactly.
And that's what makes you so competitive in this business. But of course,
when you study these guys, that's just like what we talked before, and I had the courtesy of being on Doc's show, and
yeah.
We were like, and you were studying Pacquiao, and we were like, hey, good little fighter, great little fighter, but this guy's by no means unbeatable.
Exactly. I look at Pacquiao and said, man, I could beat this sucker. In my mind, I could beat this sucker from the way I fight. I mean, you know, I found the flaws in Manny Pacquiao. I've told Doc, and Doc knows it very well, I'll repeat it. I mean, Floyd Mayweather has the tools, the ingredients, and the counter-punching ability to beat a Pacquiao.
Beat him and knock him out.
To beat a Pacquiao. And Shane Mosley right now, I give him an outside chance of beating
Shane
Pacquiao.
Shane is not a pure boxer. He's a
because
slug.
Of the styles involved. Right, because of the styles involved.
Shane Mosley in his prime, Dusty. Harold, does Shane in his prime make this a good show against Pacquiao?
Oh, for
sure. He'd make it a good show, but he wouldn't beat Pacquiao. And see, what y'all losing the thought of, you got 3 minutes a round. Pacquiao fights 3 minutes a round. Shane Mosley does not throw punches 3 minutes a round. That is his downfall. And that's the same thing with Floyd. They do not fight 3 minutes around. Here you got a guy that's southpaw that's
going.
You got a guy that here's a guy that's going to throw you 70, 80 punches as they say he count, but he's going to throw a lot of punches 3 minutes around. You know, but it has nothing to do with the counter. The counter punch is throwing punches, and that's the whole fact of the game. It has nothing to do with what you got. If you make the counter, you're good.
That can really mess up a guy's. In his ring.
His jab is just like a little baby jab. He ain't got no jab no better than anybody else out there with Floyd.
You see what the jab did?
But one thing that I have to say in life is the way I love about, you know, today's society. Everybody has an opinion about something. But I remember back in the day, and you can vouch for this, is that when we said something, we said one thing. How much you want to bet?
I gotta say
that's
something.
What I mean, that was my. That
Lady
was,
A
that was
is here.
Lady
A.
Like, we had an argument. How
Lady
much?
A.
I gotta say something to Harold. I was holding this question. Hey Harold, I saw you in the Hearns fight. Are you sure? How much you want to bet? You made that afro look good.
Oh, wow.
Well, Doc, no, I had class. I did have a little class.
Listen, you made that afro look good, Poppy. I was like, is that Harold in there with my man? Oh, no.
Yeah, Harold, everybody says, man, who saw the fight knows that you were doing more than holding your own in the Tommy fight.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I knew I could beat Tommy. And, you know, the whole thing, like I said, if the eye didn't go out on him, Tommy was going to get knocked out in the next two or three rounds. You know, even Tommy know that. Because one thing I knew about Tommy is, like I'm explaining
like
to you now,
I
knew that he was knocking
he
everybody
was
out in one or two rounds. And he only went 10 rounds at one time in that whole stretch of the 19 fights he had. And so I knew that the distance was going to kill him. And then the other factor was he came into Vegas 4 days before the fight, and I knew the altitude was going to catch him. So there was a lot of things that I knew was in my favor that was going to beat Tommy and stop him and everything. And so
Harold, let me ask you a question. What was the one thing with Tommy that you felt was – what was the one thing with Tommy as a fighter that you felt was, like, annoying? Well, you know, when you got in that ring fighting him. Because I saw, like, a couple of times he was trying to hit you with that lead right.
Yeah.
Was that as annoying to you as him coming
Hello?
Over and hitting you with...
Yeah, thanks.
Nothing was annoying because we had already figured Tommy out before the fight.
Before
we signed the contract.
All right. Oh, thanks.
And then when we got to the point where... I was sparring with guys that was 6'4 and 6'3 during my whole training period. So I was already prepared for the height situation. And I knew I had to go inside and working, which was they had no problem with me. But my point is that we didn't have no problem with Tommy at all. That's just come the fight was getting more in my favor as the fight was going on. And the only thing that Tommy had was the fact that he thought he was a big killer, and I liked the way he fought because he was going to fight. He had a lot of heart. He was going to come bring it to you, and I was going to do it, and I was going to be the same way. I was known not to step back, and I wasn't going to step back from him.
So how was Tommy being as long as I'm not a ramrod job? You didn't think that was going to be basically
hit me a couple of times. The person that really I was working with Howard Davis for speed and for my training for Tommy, and I got away from Howard Davis' jab as much as I could, I knew I could get away from Tommy's jab. And that's because I was able to slip a lot of Tommy's jabs and everything. Tommy's got a strong jab, don't get me wrong. Now when you talk about jabs and you talk about Floyd Mayweather, Tommy Hearns is a jab. Floyd Mayweather is not a jab. That's a big difference.
You're right. Absolutely. It's not a jab. It's a It's a distance. It's a fake out. It's out there to confuse the dude or attract his attention.
The bottom line is that, you know, Mayweather just doesn't. When you talk about it, and you talked about this, Harold, Doc Stanley Sports Def on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Champ Sports Def, the show, the panel's all here. Lonnie Bradley, middleweight champion of the world, Harold Weston Jr., welterweight champion of the world, the Stanley Baby Lewis Golden Glove champion, Mel Smith Jr., WFS star, C-Wings legendary man from the Jet Man. Coach Ryan's right-hand man, who just said anything without him, and the first lady, boxing lady, A, they're all in the house. And you talked about, also, you know, the thing you ran into, and Lonnie, you ran into, is that you guys were in the era of where guys were weighing in the day before the fight, so for all intents and purposes, you know, when you fought Tommy, Howard, you were welterweight fighting the junior middleweight, am I right? Or damn near light heavy.
Well, Tommy, that was surprising. We weighed in the day before the fight, and Tommy, like I told everybody, I mean, when I saw Tommy, he looked like a skinny little rail. So I knew I was gonna break him apart. But the night when he stepped into the ring, it looked like he put on like 30 or 40 pounds, and I mean, he looked like big giant, like a mountain. And I said, oh, my God, they got the wrong guy in here. I said, I got a fight on my hand tonight. And so, you know, that was the whole thing about Tommy. And when Ray Leonard called me up and asked me, you know, what it was about Tommy, so he's getting ready to fight him and everything, I said, just don't look at him when the bell rings and when he takes his robe off. He's not going to be the same person you saw at the weigh-in.
Harold, I'm going to tell you something. Ray Leonard said the same thing. Ray said when he looked across the ring, he said that couldn't be the same guy at the weigh-in.
It was amazing.
He said his whole upper body said light heavyweight, and he said if you notice before the fight, what he did during the introduction, he kept jumping up and down so Tommy would notice how much taller and bigger he was than him.
But it ain't no different to Tommy. There's one thing I can say, Tommy. Tommy was a pure fighter. I don't care if you weigh 200, 400 pounds. If you fought Tommy Hearns them first five rounds, you got something on your mind. You got a lot of punches coming at you, and he's trying to hurt you. Tommy's the only fighter I ever know that goes out to try to really, 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 really hurt you.
But Harold, you came at him that fight, Harold. Harold, you came at him that fight. It wasn't like you were ducking at all.
Well,
came at him. You took it to him.
Well, you got to understand, I had the same attitude he had.
You took it to him.
So,
it wasn't like you were ducking. I saw him trying to box you, like hit and not get hit. But you were taking it to him.
But Lady A, Harold said, Tommy, really, 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 really,
really, no question, man.
Tommy said,
I had a kid named Mark McDowell who fought Tommy for the junior middleweight championship, Mark asked me about Tommy. I said, what you got to avoid, just go and fight him and do the best you can. But I said, because if he hits you with that right hand to the body and then come
you're
up
right.
there, it's all over. And so, you know, Mark, when the bell rung, Mark was scared to death. And I told him, I said, don't look at Tommy. I said, don't look at him. Don't pay no mind.
Don't look at the
light. So I'm telling you, when you turn around, you see the young men, the young kids today fight. If they had a Tommy Hearns around, believe me, a lot of them would just run away, believe me. Tommy was a vicious guy, man. He scares the jive out of you. He scares you to death.
Even Durant was scared.
Okay, one at a time now. One at a time.
Killing him.
Hey, but now, what happened with Madal and Tommy?
Well, he hit Madal with that right hand to the body, a straight right hand to the body, and froze him,
exactly.
And then came right on top and knocked him out. That was
exactly.
It.
The things
I told him not to do, and he did what I did it. I told him not to look at him. He looked at him.
Got scared to death, and then
he froze right there.
But how can I tell you?
That's the same thing that he did to Durant.
How could he not look at him, Tommy?
He cut Durant's eye.
Well, what I'm saying,
Durant with that right hand, Durant came down dead. He was unconscious.
We know
what I'm saying, Mel. When you, now look at him. Look down at the floor.
Yeah.
What I'm saying?
Watch
and look
feet.
At feet. Don't look up. Because if you look up, I'm telling you, it's like a big concert. And he's so tall, all you want to do is look at his waist on down. You know what I mean? That's
you need every psychological advantage you have when you're doing
that.
Yeah.
But
well,
I'm telling you, when he takes that away from you and you look at him, you say, oh, shit, you're finished. The fight's over.
You know what? It's funny because that Durant fight, the round before, Durant missed the right hand or something. And when he came back to the corner, Emmanuel told him, take him out now. Don't play with him.
Right.
Exactly.
And he took him out
because
Durant was the kind of guy that Durant would have got him about four or five times. If Durant would have hit him, he'd have took him out.
Durant was scared to death.
Durant would have seen that he could hurt him.
If you look at the film, he's scared to death.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, scared to death.
So when Durant
always had problem with stand up kind of boxers, guys who knew how to maneuver around the ring to keep them on balance.
Lonnie and Howard, what about Durant was past his prime? What about a younger Durant? Would a younger Durant stood up to him? How
got knocked out?
Yeah,
I mean Tommy was a vicious puncher, man. Believe me, Tommy makes you cry, bro. He hit you so hard it makes you cry.
He had a good jab.
He had a good jab. He had a good right hand. I mean, good right hand.
Yeah.
And I mean, sometimes he'll throw that right. He's got a good left hook, too. He can hook off the jab, and that was the amazing thing about him.
Yeah.
Tommy was a good boxer. He was a good boxer.
Balance is the name of the game in this sport. And when it comes to Pacquiao, he's never really on balance. And that's going to be one of his downfalls when he fights against the five-line sport. And if you watch that fight with Manuel
Marquez
actually fought him, he kept Pacquiao at bay, just some double jab right here,
absolutely,
man, in combination to the body.
Yeah.
And so now you got a guy, Floyd, who's been fighting this technique since his whole time he was able to put the gloves on, is much, much sharper in those physical attributes than any other fighter, and that's going to be a problem for Pacquiao.
Exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lonnie and Harold and the rest of the panel, question, and we'll go on. What's happened to – where is Paul Williams, Harold?
Paul Williams trying to get himself together. That's what happens with
fighters.
Cold as a mackerel. I mean, he's trying to get himself together.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, a lot of our guys don't want to fight him anyway. So, I mean, this just gives everybody a way out, not to even deal with him.
Yeah, he had too much
of everything going on in that fight. He was too close, too confident, and he was too comfortable. Because, a fight don't start until actually the third round. If you ask any professional nowadays, you don't really get a chance to get into a top professional fight until about the third round,
And Lonnie,
Tommy Hearns, you don't go to the third round, you be knocked out for it. He starts in round one. Round one. So don't put that inclusion into some fighter's head. No, he's going to do three. No. He started round one.
My
name
is with Paul
Williams, Lonnie and panel. Why is a guy who's naturally blessed with that kind of height and that kind of reach always on the inside?
Because he's not strong enough to keep a person on the outside. It takes
really?
A lot of strength. You can pity pat and box, but a man will walk you down. But if you're throwing this jab like you're throwing a right hand, and you know, the same instance with Buster Douglas and Tyson. Buster Douglas was able to keep Tyson at bay because he was big and strong. Now, if you're big and strong and you're shooting, four or five punches at a time and coming right back and doing it again, that's pressure on a man. Some guys don't know how to keep that up. So that's what Paul Williams figured. It's a lot easier for him to fight inside because now he can stand and slug. You don't have to think and punch. You just let his hands go. And Martinez is seems like he's a very smart guy. He figured, well, shit, I'm close now. All I got to do is just punch overhand right. This guy, I never see it. And that's what happened.
Paul Wayne.
But Ron, if you were advising him and you were training him, you would try to get him to fight bigger, fight taller.
But see, that would definitely make him fight taller. I would say, listen, you're a pure boxer. You're a boxer. You keep this man under your jab, and you keep him turning. You know, you don't stand in the middle of the ring and fight with this guy. He's a sludgy. He's not, you know. So, you know, you use your physical attributes, which is being long arm, tall height, reach, advantage. Those are things you use. He didn't use any of those when he fought against Martinez, and that's what
Lonnie, you're saying the same thing that Harold has said, that Conor has said, and that's redundantly being said here. You know, you have these talented guys, but they're being trained and tutored and nurtured by guys who don't have a clue, Lonnie.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I guess, you know, hey, it's an entertainment business now. No one is going to sit around. You know, when I was coming up, you know, I heard a story that said there's no room in boxing for perfection. You know what I mean? So,
well, it's true what you said, Lonnie, because of the fact that there is no improvement. If you're undefeated, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And yet you got to go back last week to look at Juan Manuel Lopez, who was 30 and old. He fought the same way. He fought a half a dozen different ways. Doc, you remember, I told you the same thing when he fought Rogers Mantagua.
I don't remember nothing you told me.
You blanked it out. But when he fought Rajiv Mantagua slapped him, almost knocked him out.
And we said that. And same thing is like Spinks, like Holmes and Snipes and Tawa. And if he had hit him in the middle of the ring,
exactly,
he'd hit the canvas. But he hit him, and he fell against the ropes, and he didn't fall.
Right. And then he fights Steven Luevano,
right,
and knocks out Luevano. Then he fights Concepcion, and he knocks out Concepcion, but he didn't change his freaking style or his defensive movements.
Well, Dusty, let's be honest, okay? Let's be honest. Juan Manuel does not have the greatest defense.
No, he does not.
You know that. He's susceptible.
But
I mean,
that's exactly what I'm trying to tell you.
But you know what? But nowadays, who does have defense? I mean, in today's game,
there's
no more Harold Wesson. There's no more Wilfred Benitez. These guys don't know nothing. They think everything is offense. I mean, even in what sports are guys
playing defense? Even Jermaine Taylor, perfect example.
Was that the line?
Even Jermaine Taylor, perfect example.
Oh, my God, yeah, you're 100% right.
He gets tired, and his defense, which he never really worked on, fails him every time.
Here's a guy seconds away from winning the fight. Bam! Seconds away.
On two occasions.
Yeah, two
on
fights.
On three occasions.
Yeah, yeah. Seconds. I mean, I'm wondering now. I'm thinking there's a possibility that Bernard Hopkins threw the fights to him. I don't know how he beat Bernard.
Oh, man. Hey.
I can tell you that because I won money on it. So I can tell you how he beat Bernard.
Bernard,
and I won money on that fight. I got like 3-1 odds on it.
See, I don't care with Harold. Forget all of y'all. I don't care with Harold.
The reason why I knew he was going to beat Bernard because Bernard is not used to anybody that's got fast hands. Bernard is not going to take chances when person's hands are faster than his. And that's where Bernard had the fear. And so as Bernard was losing a round and he thought this young man was going to get tired
down the straight.
What Bernard was trying to wait for. But the fact was Bernard was very leery. Bernard was very leery about the young man's speed, and the kid could punch a little bit too. So that's what it is. I'm saying Bernard's a crafty fighter and everything else, but he ain't gonna take a lot of chances. And that's how Bernard got beat both times.
Wouldn't you just say that Bernard is more of like a counter fighter, really?
Well, Bernard's more of a safe fighter. He's a player safe, and that's how he fights his fight.
Exactly. He's a clown. He wants to
jump in
jars and do the Philadelphia shuffle all over the place.
And the reason why I know about Bernard is because I used to have him when he first started fighting,
so I'm the one that brought him along. You're the guy that brought him. And Lonnie, you have some thoughts on Bernard Hopkins?
Yes. Everyone pay attention to Bernard close from the early part of his career. He could not box. He couldn't do that. The only thing he could do was fight and bully you inside the ring. And that was his forte, you know, coming up early in his early career. You know, he didn't even want to throw a jab because he got counted. He didn't want to get hit. Exactly. You were resulting back to where, you know, he's afraid of anyone with fast hands. So now, you know, as he puts his time in, he's fighting against less experienced guys, which the fundamentals of boxing has changed now. Everyone is all about just getting in a fight instead of counter or punching, slip, jab, move, you know, punch, block, you know. So they're not taking the time out to learn that. So that's what Bernard, who's been doing this much longer than these guys, can outthink him and look like a world-class fighter today against the younger, less opposition. But
you know, you know, Doc, it's crazy that he just alluded to that, because remember what Emmanuel Stewart told us that day at the press conference with Sergio Martinez? He said the same exact thing.
Yeah. What you're saying, Lonnie, I mean, you guys know. Here's another thing, too. He's fighting to fight Pasquale again. Lonnie, you lead this first. This one. Him and Pasquale, can he beat Pasquale?
Well, this is the second time around. You know, and Pasquale probably figured, man, listen, I got a lot more confidence in this fight. You know, I'm pretty much, you know, Bernard's getting 2 years older, and I've gotten 2 years better, you know, in the sport. So I think he would actually beat Bernard this time around.
Harold?
Yeah, no, I think Bernard's going to beat him for one particular reason. Pasquale's not going to change his style. If Pasquale was a fighter that I know is going to change his style and do different things in the next fight, then I will give him a shot. But I know he's not going to change his style. One thing about Bernard, he's an old crafty pro. He's going to change a few things in his artillery for this fight. And I think Bernard's going to probably beat him easier this time than he's beat him last time.
Now, why won't Pasquale change, Howard? The same old
because he don't have a track. You got to understand, these fighters and trainers today, they don't have the trainers that have that skill
Absolutely. To
know how to teach them any more than what they know themselves. It's like anything else in life. A person can only go but so far, and that's all they know. That's all they're going to teach them, and that's as far as these guys can teach these kids. And that's why you got so many kids that don't know what they're doing in
that's
the sport and don't want to put the time in to get another guy that might can help them out. And that's a downfall.
Well, and I think a lot of it, too, is greed and jealousy. They don't want to let somebody else in there. They're going to cut into their money. You may stab them in the back.
Right.
You know. Lady A, Pasquale, Hopkins, who you picking this one?
I got to go. How much you want to bet? I'm going with Harold Hopkins. I'm taking it old school. How much you want to bet? I got Hopkins.
No one needs to be said. Rooney, where you at, Rooney? Who you like, Rooney?
Dog, I got A. I think that Father Time is finally going to catch up with Bernard. He has looked magnificent for an older guy. He just looked magnificent for a guy of his age. But how long can he keep doing it, Doc? I'm starting to think he's doing it with smoke and mirrors. So I'm
Absolutely.
Thinking that Father Time is finally going to catch up with Bernard, man, and Pasquale gets the unanimous decision.
All right,
no.
So 2-2, Pasquale. Dusty, you break it. Harold likes Bernard. Lady A is going with Harold. Rooney and Lonnie are going with
Pasquale.
Okay.
Pasquale. Who you going with, Dusty?
I like Pasquale for the simple reason.
Okay, I'm going the other way.
That,
I'm with Bernard. Whoever you pick,
reason,
I'm going the other way. Good. Okay,
that,
it's even.
For the simple reason.
Put a light on something when you finish.
That Bernard Hopkins' best fight, and he beat Pasquale, was when he fought him the first time.
Wow.
If it hadn't been those three knockdowns, he would have won the damn title. But
hey,
Pasquale is going to go after him. And let me tell you something. Bernard is on borrowed time, and this guy, a young bull, is not going to let an old timer like.
Okay, Dusty,
forget
it, Dusty.
Dusty, I'm going with Manny Ramirez.
hey, don't start that because he'll start calling me Barry Bonds. So let it be.
I did that.
Hey, I'm going with Manny Ramirez. Forget about it. Harold, let me go with Manny Ramirez.
Hey, hold on. Let's go to the control panel. Big C, 3-3, 3 for Hopkins, 3 for Pasquale. Who you picking, Bernard Hopkins, Pasquale?
Hopkins.
There it is, 4-3. Ladies and gentlemen, we have got about a minute left, but if everybody stay around, we're going to do another 30 minutes, if you want, of Sports in Depth with the mic on, lights off. But before we close out this first segment. We want to just thank everybody for being with us. Lonnie, if you can hang around with us, stay with us a little longer, baby. Drop out when you want. Same thing in house. Stay with us. Gang, don't anybody move. Big C, as always, thanking you for being the job that's exquisite. We're going to play a little John Coltrane, then Larry Hardesty will close the show for us. Coltrane, please, Mr. C. And a good trip for your mother, too, as she's leaving away. Come on, thank you for another show. Thank you for allowing us this time to get together with our radio family and during the course of the day, our friends. Thank you for Resurrection Sunday. Thank you for little things that we so largely take for granted. Thank you for being our God as we humbly bow and pray and thank you, knowing that all blessings are undeserved. Thank you for your goodness, your grace, and your mercy. In the name of your darling son, Jesus. Amen. Larry Hardesty, let's say goodbye to this portion of the show.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
And with that, let's come back with Larry for this segment. Open up, Mr. Hardesty. As we do, lights off, mic on.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth,
is
that special segment, Sports in Depth, with the lights off and the mic on. Mr. Coltrane, one more time, please. Dear Lord. Again, as always, all homage and praise to you. Remember that lady that prayed one time? You're God all by yourself. We thank you for being our God. We thank you for the blessings bestowed upon us. We thank you for little things that we so largely take for granted. Blessings unseen, unknown, undeserved. Thank you for your grace and your mercy. Grace is getting what we don't deserve, and mercy is not getting what we do deserve. Thank you for your knowledge of Jesus. Bless our friends, our family, our panel. Go down to Virginia. Over to Brazil, DR. And we ask these blessings in the name of your darling son, Jesus. Amen. Okay, it's that segment now where we turn the lights off, keep the mic on. I was watching some Overture Pryor. Pryor was an amazing, amazing character. I didn't know Paul Mooney wrote so much for Pryor. And unbeknownst, there were some things that I was listening to. And the documentary, Pryor wrote the script for Blazing Saddles and was kind of dismayed that he didn't get the part that Cleavon Little got. And Richard Pryor was the first black actor to make $4 million. Hey. In the movie Superman, he actually made more money than Steve Reeves did. But now it's boxing, and we've got everybody here. Lady A is here, Harold's here, Lonnie Brady's here, Dusty's here. C-Wing still with us? We got Rooney.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. C-Wing, you got a question? Start it off. Start this segment. Sports it up with the lights off and the mic still on. Start it off, C-Wing.
I just want to say that I was out here, me and Hoops. We went to the game today, and I think the New York fans showed a lot of class. We gave a standing ovation to the Knicks, who basically was starting behind it. With all the injuries, and I think the series was over before it started, with Chauncey Billups out, with Stoudemire hurt, but they still played with pride. They played with a lot of heart against a team, although an older team, but a team that's very, very experienced, has a deep history.
A tremendous team, and today the graphics showed in every game. One of the big four stepped up. First game, it was Ray Allen. Okay, Allen hit the big three, 24 points. Second game, it was Rondo. Third game, it was Pierce. Today, Kevin Garnett. And the post game, to hear him talk about, he said, well, I didn't do anything. And they said, when you scored 26 points, he said, well, no, my game is not about the points. My game is about the setting screens, rebounding, going low. So every game, one of their big four stepped up. You make a tremendous point. Lloyd Carroll said earlier, if we had a win seven games, if the better team wins, Boston is a better team, but you're making some good points. People forget, you know, you can't get back games that you should have won. The Knicks should have won both of those games in Boston, or one of them.
Yes.
So if you win those first two games, even if you lose the two games a day, you've got two more games to play. Phillips gets better. Okay, Stoudemire gets better. I mean, you could even have conceded the game and maybe pulled up. But, you lost games that you should have won. And you got to take your hat off to Donnie Walsh in a lot of ways. You got two outstanding players. There's a lot of stuff under the cap. But the question here, and we'll start with you, C-Wings, you know, is D'Antoni coming back next year, or is Mark Jackson or Doc Rivers going to get the job? Does he come back next year? C-Wings, you started off.
I think he comes back. He has one year left. I think he'll be back next year. If it's a lockout, he won't be. He just won't be back. But I think he lost a lot of his luster and his marketability. But I can't see him being here past another year past next season. At the latest, and that's not. I don't see him being here past next season. After next season, he's done if he doesn't produce.
Yeah, but C-Wings, he got him in the playoffs. They haven't been in the playoffs for what, 7 years. He got him in the playoffs. I mean, they played with the Stoudemire got hurt. I mean, didn't he do a good enough job to come back another year?
Yes,
or two?
He did. I think they were better off not making the playoffs. The way that they got swept, the Knicks and Boston are the only series that's over. I mean, they swept them. Even Philadelphia won one game.
I told
Hoops today. I said they were better off not making the playoffs.
But a
good thing about going to the game, other than watching them play, we happened to see Cornbread Maxwell.
Oh, Cornbread
Very
Maxwell.
Nice guy.
Different Cornbread Maxwell. One of the players back for the. I mean, no, they had.
Back
they,
in the day.
Well, if I'm correct, he came from Maryland Eastern Shore.
But you got to understand one thing, that the coach with the Phoenix Suns came back, was able to motivate them to come back and do something. First of all, you had a ragtag, scotch tape type of team that brought in the savior in mid-season, which is Carmelo Anthony, to bring the team back into the playoff contention.
Yeah, but games one and two with the right coach could have been won. Those games were
You know what D'Antoni needs? He needs a defensive, like Doc Rivers. He has a defensive.
D'Antoni's not
like a defensive coach assistant. D'Antoni can't do it all, and he needs to learn that for next this off season. They really need to look at that. And he needs someone to help him out with defense. He's good with offense. Don't get me wrong. But he can't do everything by himself.
And not only that, see, but Billups is not the. If you're going to leave D'Antoni there, because I believe Doc Rivers' contract is over, but it's basically common knowledge that he's going to take at least a year off. However, if you're going to leave D'Antoni in place, you have got to have pieces to try to fit his system. Phillips does not fit his system. He's older now. He doesn't run up and down like that. I would not take up the option on Billups' contract. I believe he's supposed to get $14 million. I think he has an option to opt out for $3.7 million. I basically would say thank you for your services, but give him the $3.7 million. Take that extra $10 million that would be left over from what he would have got and start looking for a point guard.
Well, you
basically,
see,
the series
understand.
Was like, I'm sorry.
No, but you have to understand that Billups was injured by Howard, Orlando Magic. He was injured. He was playing good ball. To me, the best of the three players, Anthony and Amari, was Chauncey Billups, who was a veteran who had already won a ring. So he was.
Yeah,
to me,
he
was
injured.
But
he doesn't really run up and down enough for D'Antoni's system. I don't know if he can play.
Basically, this series looked like
This series looked like, I don't know if anyone actually ever went to watch the Harlem Globetrotters in person, how they just dance around on the team. That's basically what this series was. Basically, the Knicks were the sparring partners for the Boston Celtics to get them ready.
So, see, you're saying the Knicks played the part of the Washington Generals, huh?
I've seen basketball, high school basketball teams that could have played better than what I've seen the Knicks play. And I think it also goes towards D'Antoni's, his style of playing. I mean, that's going to be his Achilles heel. It doesn't fit into this New York, what the New York Knicks need. And it seems like a lot of coaches haven't been able to see that over the last 20, 25 years with the Knicks, maybe even 30 years.
Let me ask a question. I want to ask a question because you guys are talking about coaches, and, you know, we were alluding before talking about trainers and boxing and stuff. I want to ask Harold a question. Hey, Harold, why is it that for the most part, the top fighters that you see now always seem to have the same trainers?
Yeah.
For example, Harold, you know, we all know about Emmanuel Stewart, legendary Emmanuel Stewart. He's been around the fight game for, like, forever. But they all seem to have the same trainers, the same guys that are at the top. It's either Buddy McGirt, Freddie Roach, right, or Emmanuel Stewart, or Mayweather. Mayweather's father, Floyd. I mean, why is that, Harold? Why is it so difficult to find a good trainer these days?
Well, like I said earlier, is that the trainers that are good out there, they're not in the game no more because they've been blacked out of the game because of the fact that they speak up. These guys are very strong-minded guys, and the fighters are not fighting on a regular basis for these guys to be around them to take care. You know, boxing can take care of family, a whole family. It can take care of a whole country if you got the right right fighter that's fighting, like Manny Pacquiao. I mean, you know, money he's making is unbelievable. But my point is that these guys got these only trainers that we have, these 504 fighters, trainers, is because the trainers today cannot stay around just staying in the gym but not having no platform to take their fighters to other fights. And so we only got Emmanuel Stewart and Freddie Roach and them. They made a bundle of money, so they're able to stay around and they can play the game for a while. And that's the reason why it's happening.
Harold, you know, the fighters on the crew, Lonnie and Dusty, is there one guy, Harold, out there, one guy that you ever say to yourself, you know, if I had this guy, man, it could, you know, share my knowledge with him, I could make this guy a world champion. Is anybody out there?
I said that about Jermaine Taylor.
This guy?
I said that about Jermaine Taylor.
I'm sorry,
you said
Jermaine?
Yeah, I said that about Jermaine Taylor.
Well, you take guys like, and I think Lady A's question is apropos to what we're talking about, is improving the caliber and the talent and the knowledge of fighters today. You take guys who are not trainers, ladies and gentlemen, but they are teachers and they're motivators and they're mentors, you know, that will take a fighter and turn him around and make him see where his flaws are and eliminate or try to eliminate those flaws. A case in point, Exhibit A in any court of boxing law is the fact that you take a man, Doc, you and I talked to Doc Emmanuel Stewart numerous of times before the court of fight with Yuli Foreman, how he was not going to change him or teach him new moves. He's going to get him back to the way he was before and remind him of what his winning ways were before he was defeated.
Yeah, but
you know
what? Anytime you look at and you know, Harold, correct me if I'm wrong, but anytime you have a good fighter, it's everything is based off sound fundamentals. And what you're seeing is a lot of these kids do not have a sound fundamental system. So what happens is, but you know what? Listen, Dusty, you're right. But at the same time, it's like Harold said. I think it was 3 or 4 weeks ago. You can't throw these guys in a ring, okay? And they're in there fighting, and they're like they're pity patting and all this other stuff. Hey, you know what? You need your sound fundamentals to develop. And if your fundamentals are not developed, how the hell are you going to go in and do all this fancy stuff, and you don't even have a sound fundamental system? And that's what's going on in boxing today. You got these guys out here. They don't have strong fundamental skills.
Lady A, look what happened.
Tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, Harold's the guy. I mean, that's my man right there. Harold, tell me.
Look what happened last week with Juan Manuel Lopez. He fights a guy. Let me tell you something.
Nene, first of all, let me tell you. You can't win a fight if you don't have defense, Nene. Come on, he's getting hit all over the place.
No, I got to get my point across. Salido was knocked out 5 times. One of the dudes who knocked him out was Manny Pacquiao.
Okay.
He goes out there. He gives Gamboa a hard time. He knocks out Gamboa. You figure, well, he's still a stumble bump. Here you look at Juan Manuel Lopez, 30-0 with something like 22, 23 knockouts. You figure, he's a walkthrough. What happens? Juan Manuel Lopez fights him stupidly like he fought before. He fought before. Mm-hmm. He gets hit with a right hand.
Dusty, do not fight. Did Manny Ramirez pop up in your mind last time?
It's true.
Is that yes or no?
I'm telling you, man.
He doesn't correct his mistakes. He's the type of dude that's going to, although hurt, he's going to go up there and exchange punches with his chin up in the air. And that's why the referee stopped the fight. But what am I talking about?
I'm talking about fundamentals. That's what I'm talking about.
Let me ask you a question. What is the real problem here is that the American fighters are not has gotten worse because, like you said, the fundamentals are not there. The fighters are coming from Mexico, Puerto Rico, and foreign countries.
Stop cutting him off.
Yeah.
I want to listen to what he has to say.
I mean, the thing is that the guys from overseas are definitely got more fundamental, and they're more hungrier than the American fighters, and that's a come now that you see more.
Why are they more fundamentalist? And Lonnie, you know, have you thought about training, Lonnie, becoming a trainer?
Yeah, actually, I'm training a couple of guys.
Who are you training?
Well, I had a guy who fought in the Golden Gloves, finals. Last year. But I don't have a profound student that I have yet to take on one. I have to find a kid that's serious enough who's willing to listen. You have to be willing to listen.
Now, I mean, you would think, here's Lonnie Bradley, middleweight champion, world champion. Here's Harold Weston, legendary matchmaker, welterweight champion. I mean, you know, why won't they listen, Lonnie? Why won't they listen, Harold? Why are guys overseas listening, and why are guys in the States not listening? And we've had some of the greatest champions. I mean, why are they not listening, Lonnie?
Well, because maybe they don't have too much trust in their trainers. You know,
trust,
you have to actually trust your trainer or the people that surround you to listen to what they say. You know,
a lack of confidence in the trainers. Because believe you me, when a trainer tells a fighter, this is what's wrong, we got to correct this, and this is a bell after bell after bell after bell, that dumb fighter goes out and does the same thing. This fighter should not be in the ring. You got to listen to your teacher.
That's why
you
I go back to being smart. You know, most fighters, you know, people think fighters are dumb brutes, but this is a very thinking man's sport, strategic strategy-wise.
Exactly. It's a thinking man's sport. And you got to go in there and look at what you're doing that's wrong.
Hold on, you have a mirror, a shadow box, and you have the pads. And that's what's important.
And like I said, when you come into any sport, or any business, you want to know the basics.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You want to know the basics. So, but if you come in, you know, they say the first thing is to always listen to your trainer. You know, that's your eyes and ears, when you're busy just fighting. You know, you can't look and see, do everything yourself. You know, so, they teach you that. And some fighters, you know, they come up with a different mindset of that, you know, they can do it their way.
You know what I find fascinating? Do you think it's a different breed of training now as opposed to the...
Go ahead, Rooney.
Good, Rooney.
No, I'm going to make it brief.
What I really find fascinating is, and the fighters will probably smile when I say this, as you know, the corners in HBO and Showtime is always mic'd. And I always find the banter between the coaches and the fighters and the advice to be somewhat fascinating to listen to. I mean, you'll see guys here, Buddy McGirdle, something saying, like, look, I want you to double up on the jab, come over with the right hand. He's looking for, you know, the hooks. You can hit him with the hook anytime you want. And, you know, when you listen to the advice and then see if the guy goes out to try to do that, it's actually, if you're a student of the game, pretty fascinating to hear and watch.
It changed the outlook of the fight, just one little move. Everything, you know what I mean? It changes the outcome, or it just makes your opponent just that much uncomfortable. You know, you're in there to make your opponent uncomfortable for whatever he's doing. You know, if he's comfortable jabbing, he'll have a feel for that with you all day. But the moment he feels uncomfortable jabbing, then the table turns on your half. Now you're controlling the fight. So, you know, you have to think of each fight, you know, in those aspects. Like, all right, well, this first minute, he got this. Now the second minute, I'm going to have to take the next 2 minutes of this round. You know,
so if that's being said, let me ask. So do you think it's the way that the fighters are able to make adjustments? Because just like I've said before, I mean, the fight with Prime Baby Bull Diaz when he was fighting Marquez, I mean, it wasn't until like the fifth or sixth round, correct me if I'm wrong, Dusty, but when he made that adjustment, that's when the complexity of the fight just changed. Exactly. So is that what fighters need to do more of? Is that what we're saying, that they need to do more of that, Harold? What do you think?
My whole feeling is that the fighters can't learn no more in the ring if their trainer doesn't know no more, and that's the big problem with it all. I mean, you know,
the kids are willing.
So you think a fighter is as strong as the trainer, the quality of the trainer that's training the fighter?
You got to understand that, like I said, that if the trainer only knows jabs and right hand, that's all you can teach him. Because if I tell a fighter go slip inside and stay in the body, he wouldn't know how to do that. Okay,
right,
in a certain
exactly.
way you got to do that. If I tell him to stay on the outside and get on his toes and box, he wouldn't know how to do that. You got to know how to condition yourself for that. If I tell him to stay there and counterpunch, he wouldn't know what to do with that. He wouldn't even understand it.
And I said put the
pressure on. There's all kinds of different movements and things you got to learn that every fighter doesn't adapt to. But the fact is that, you know, you got to fight it, and trainers are mostly like this, train a fighter just one way, and that's the way that they were taught how to fight, and that's the only way they can teach them.
So is that why, Harold, why you feel like some boxers that have certain trainers excel more than others because of that? Because
until they get caught and somebody finally catches up, like with Paul Williams, they caught up with him, right? Mm-hmm. And Barreto, I mean, the kid that just lost his title.
Juanma Lopez.
No, the other kid, the Waldo.
Andre Berto.
He lost his title, fought the same way. He hasn't changed since the amateurs. Until somebody finally catches up and they finally figure him out. That's when everything goes downhill, and that's what's happening.
Then
it will go back to what I'm saying, though, Howard, which is like they're not as.
I thought you said you didn't feel like being on the show.
Hold on, let me finish because you know once I get flowing, I gotta finish asking Howard a question. So then basically it's about them not being able to make the adjustment.
Well, I think what we're getting away from is the fact.
This ain't the Harold Weston show.
I don't know. Maybe I just got turned on by the afro. I don't know.
That's
Harold, can I ask you a question?
It don't get any better than that. Go, gang.
I feel like
this is different other than the. I'm sorry.
Go. What we're getting away from is the fact, too, that not only you have a trainer, a mentor, and a teacher, you as a student of the game, have to study.
Dusty, hold on. See when he had to set this up. See when he's jumping. Dusty, you got to understand. You, Harold, Lonnie, exceptions. You're old school guys. What I've been told here is guys today don't listen, are stupid, and don't know how to fight. I mean, this is just you're telling me. I mean, Sea Wings, did you have something to add, Sea Wings?
Well, I had a question on a different spectrum of boxing that
we're
not
talking baseball.
Series.
It's boxing right now, okay?
No, not boxing. Okay. No, I had a question.
Listen,
as far
and don't say Manny Ramirez.
No, I mean, we talked about how boxing was set up as far as, you know, boxers' rights and stuff like that. And I always wondered, like, when you hear, like, Manny Pacquiao, he's going to receive $20 million. And then you hear these stories of these boxers when they retire, they don't have money,
exactly.
They're broke and stuff like that. Realistically, say for instance a fighter like Pacquiao or whatever, it could be any fighter, and their purse is slated for $20 million.
Right.
Realistically, what is the fighter going to usually walk away with after paying, you know, promoters, trainers, this person,
that person?
I mean, what would they realistically walk away with? I mean, you know, it's like the lotto. It says $300 million, but you really don't get that.
Exactly. Well,
it's a business.
A champ like Manny Pacquiao will walk away. If you're going to talk about percentages and taxes and the promoter and the whole nine yards, will probably be a good percentage of that money of the $20 million.
With him being Filipino,
it's the Doc Stanley Show. Just relax.
I'm trying to remind you.
That's why I'm quiet now.
Harold, you've been a promoter. With him being the Philippine, is there a different tax structure for him as money-wise as opposed to if he was American?
The
whole thing, let me get y'all all straight. The promoter does not get any money out of the fighter's purse. Okay, let me get that straight.
Thanks, Harold.
The other thing, Manny Pacquiao's in a different situation than most fighters. He manages himself. So he has no managers
absolutely
taking a cut out of his money. And pretty much he's paying his advisor, which is one of his friends, that he's probably just giving him about 5 or 2% of the money. So Manny Pacquiao's situation is much, much structured different than the ordinary fighter who goes into a contract with a manager, and he's got paid 33 1/3%, and he's got to pay his trainer 10%. So that right there, if you want to look at the overall picture, 43% goes to the people that's in his corner. And then you got people, you know, if he hires some other seconds and things, then you got another 4% or 5%. So almost 50% hit. But you got to understand, too, after all that's being paid off, now Uncle Sam got to get his money after the fact. And that's where fighters lose it. Because when he looks at his money, if you got $100,000, $43,000 got to go to the manager and the trainer. Then here come Uncle Sam. He's going to take the other $57,000. And he said, okay, now you got to give me you got to give me 30% of this money. Okay, out of that $57,000. So basically, that's where the fight is. He ends up with, you know, for like $30,000, maybe $20,000, and that's his cut.
But Harold, I mean, Doc had asked earlier, like, being that Manny Pacquiao is in another country, right? What rate would he be paying out at? I mean, because you already talking about half, like, $22 million, right?
No,
so what? The half of that was like 10?
Yeah, what he will be paying, and tell you the truth, he's making $20 million, but he's got such a unique contract. On paper they're gonna tell you $20 million, but it's a little bit more because Manny Pacquiao gets all the rights in the Philippines for the telecast over there. Now with the United States, what he gets paid here, he would have to pay the United States government money here before he leaves here during the fight. So they might give him. They might pay the government like $5 million or $7-8 million out of the 20. But Manny Pacquiao is still gonna make $20-some million because he's got all the rights. You got like means all the people in the Philippines. He owns the Philippines. So when they shut down the Philippines and they put it on TV and all that, they pay all that money goes to Manny Pacquiao.
Harold, let me ask you, what happened to a fighter like Mike Tyson, a quarter billion dollars?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to tell you.
Or that's just inflated.
That everybody felt sorry for Shane Mosley, who's only getting on paper $5 million. And Manny Pacquiao is getting over $20 million.
Right.
Now, there is Bob Arum, top rank, the Shane Mosley promotion, and the Manny Pacquiao promotion. three promotional companies. And if Shane Mosley is not getting
Hold on, that's our cue, gang. That's our cue. We're about ready. This half hour's but it's about gone. We got the roll. It's the end of a wonderful evening. We're going to have to shut it down here. It'll get shut off. I want to thank everybody for joining the panel. Once again, a quick prayer to the Lord. Thank you for all things and your will, your way in our life. In Jesus' name, the Lord, amen. Gang, it's time to go. It's the end of the show. It's got another 2 minutes to go. We're going to let Larry Hardesty close us out. And then, Dustin, you can say good night to everybody. Larry,
happy
say good night
Easter.
For us, please.
Good night.
Happy Easter, everybody. God bless.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Leave you with sweet thoughts. Live your life today as if it's simple for God tomorrow. Life's most simple, urgent questions. What are you doing for others? Trust in God. Like Lonnie Bradley, middleweight champion. And our man from Harlem, also Harold Weston Jr., little Coco Mosley Jr., C-Wings, who was there to see the end of the Knicks in person, Lady A, the first lady of boxing, and our heartthrob here on the line. And Dusty, so good to see you again. Dog in hand, and he had the whole family, wife, dog, and children at the thing today, boy. Dusty, bad baby. Dusty!
We had a beautiful day, Doc. I'm glad to see you. The family got together, and God bless everybody, and happy Easter. But I mean, let's not just make this a happy Easter. Let's get together every Sunday and we can discuss these things.
Do that.
But
Dusty,
it's good to
one
see
time.
Your pretty face, your handsome face, Doc. I mean, it's good to be there with the family and your mom's. God bless her.
Oh my God, it was such an emotional thing. And that hat you had on today was a little too tight. You need to kind of let the doctor have it, baby. You know what I mean? Are you feeling me on this?
Let me tell you something. That was from the French Connection, remember?
And
Buster Keaton and all that's a pork pie style. I mean, we all bring it back, man. And that was the hat I had to wear today.
Hold on, Dusty. You're gonna close out and go through the panel. Lonnie, you still with us?
Yes.
Chef, thanks for having
Lonnie,
us.
Lonnie, God bless.
Thanks for having
and
me, Johnny, man.
You know, you're gonna join us next week. One more time, Lonnie. We'll call you. Like to have you next week. You picking Hopkins over Pascal, or who you got Pascal over Hopkins?
No, I'm picking Pascal over Hopkins.
Harold, you got Hopkins.
Yeah.
Little Coco.
Yes.
Pascal.
Lady A.
Hopkins.
Big C.
Hopkins.
I got Hopkins and Dusty. Who you got? You got Pascal, right?
I got Pascal, but it's not going to be your second time. Hopkins gave his best performance last time, and they robbed him of it, man.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
Is that going to be
lawyer.
The same?
Okay, Dusty, say goodnight,
yes,
and then go back to what you're drinking.
what was I drinking? A piña colada with the family?
No, Lady A, my daughter mixed something up, mixed a drink, and she handed it to Uncle Dusty and said, Uncle Dusty, here's your special made Manny Ramirez.
Oh, my God. Hey, listen, you know you're never going to live that down, right, Dusty? Ever.
Because I'm so freaking angry at this bum for destroying his whole Hall of Fame credentials, man.
Oh,
God
my
bless everybody.
God,
Lonnie
man.
Bradley, please don't be a stranger. Harold Weston, everybody else, don't be a stranger. Let's get together next Sunday. We'll kick it. We'll knock it around, and we'll see what happens, man.
All right, guys.
All right.
I'm going to say good night. Happy Easter, Harold.
Happy Easter.
Lonnie.
Happy Easter.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, y'all. Take care.
Big Wings and Dusty are going to say goodnight to you, a.k.a. the big kneecap. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth.
God bless.
In God.
Oh, God. Oh, I miss you guys. Thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Good night.